Thank you, Ansel. I appreciate that introduction. There was one significant difference that happened to me after I got out of Harvard than when I got in. That was, I was a lot older. I got there in 1990, and I couldn't get out until 2001. So I had to wait for a professor to retire before I could graduate. And he did. So the Lord, by the providence of God, I got out of Harvard. I think it was the providence of God that I got into Harvard. And I'm going to talk about a little tonight, or this afternoon rather, about providence. God's providence, I believe. And Greville Ewing and Alexander Campbell. Now, everybody's probably heard of Alexander Campbell in this room. How many people are just interested have heard of Greville Ewing? You know who he is. So one, two, three, four, just a handful. But Greville Ewing, I think, was an important influence on Alexander Campbell. Here is a memoir that his daughter, Jessie Matheson, wrote in 1843. And there's a frontispiece that I managed to secure a copy when I was at Harvard. And there is Greville Ewing, your affectionate father, Greville Ewing, and his daughter after his death in 1841. She wrote this memoir and had that picture, portrait, put in the front of it. I'd like to begin by turning to the Millennial Harbinger. The year is 1832. This is the first series, volume 3, number 7. This is a powerful work, Carson on Baptism. Not calculated, however, to be popular. It is intended for the learned, and by them should be read. Pedobaptists and sprinklers should read it and give up the question on infant baptism. It's unscriptural. Mr. Carson has demolished their last resort and left them in deplorable destitution of Scripture and reason for their belief and practice. Now, Carson was a famous Presbyterian minister in Ireland, and he switched to being a Baptist. This person who's talking about him really doesn't know much about Carson's background. But in the Presbyterian Church, he was paid by the state, and also part of his salary came from his father-in-law. So there were emotional ties there and upheaval beyond just the finances that were involved. But he switched after he studied baptism, and he wrote and published this work in 1832. He switched from being a Presbyterian to a Baptist who immersed. The article continues, and by the way, this the author is not named, but it's from the Christian Index. And I don't know if somebody in here, Scott Harp, Ansel, somebody knows who the author is that he's quoting, Alexander Campbell is quoting this from the Christian Index, and then he makes a comment on it. His, that's Carson's, chief excellence in this book on baptism by immersion consists in fixing and determining by reference to classical usage in the Greek language the very words on which the controversy over baptism must turn. These words are hunted out in many particulars, their invariable import settled and defined beyond all possibility of question or evasion. And the whole dispute about the mode of baptism is thus reduced to a single point. We know that we know not that we ever read a abler piece of judicious, manly criticism. Mr. Carson is a Scotchman. Now that's a mistake that Alexander Campbell is going to point out, among other things, and a minister of the gospel. He has had Mr. Ewing and Dr. Wardlaw in his eye. He's been, they're his target. They both published books on baptism trying to defend the practice of sprinkling in infant baptism. And these gentlemen had each made out an article in support of the fashionable error of infant sprinkling. They are imbecile in the hands of Mr. Carson. He drives their theories and criticisms into confusion and forces into a dismal explosion all their fine conjectures. Now, on the next page, page 322, you have the editor Alexander Campbell in the Millennial Harbinger writing this remark. The editor of this paper, having seen the three gentlemen above named, Carson, Ewing, and Wardlaw, and having been intimately acquainted with two of them, begs leave to say in further commendation of them that Messrs. Ewing and Wardlaw, both Scotchmen and ministers in Glasgow, are the pastors of independent congregations. Mr. Carson, an Irishman, he's not a Scotchman, once a member of the Presbyterian Church, as were Mr. Ewing and Mr. Wardlaw, differs from the other two only on the question of infant baptism. It's interesting that they practice a plurality of elders. They believe in taking the Lord's Supper every first day of the week. Each congregation is autonomous. There's several things that we believe that Ewing and Wardlaw and even Carson believe. They are all men of the highest order as respects talents, education, and moral character, and are equally able advocates for the weekly celebration of the Lord's Supper. Now notice, this is Campbell talking about not just Carson, but he's talking about Ewing and Wardlaw, who believe in pedobaptism. They believe in infant baptism. They believe in sprinkling. And here is Alexander Campbell, who's a champion of baptism by immersion, a champion of baptism for believers only. But notice how commendatory he is of Ewing and Wardlaw. They are all men of the highest order as respects talents, education, and moral character, and are equally able advocates for the weekly celebration of the Lord's Supper. The congregations over which they preside meet every Lord's Day to break the loaf. Their arguments, Ewing and Wardlaw, are as conclusive on that subject as Mr. Carson is represented to be on this darling Baptist concern. I note a little bit of sarcasm there, the mode of baptism. I mean, it sounds strange to bring out this side in Alexander Campbell. Here he's talking about the darling Baptist concern, the mode of baptism. I mean, that's what he believes. But it's because of the attack that was made, I believe, on Ewing and Wardlaw. Well, who were these men? This is me several years ago. My hair is not as white as it is now. But in 2009, I was working on this. This actually goes back to a paper that I did under Earl West back in 1982 at the Harding Graduate School of Religion. But who were these two men whom Alexander Campbell admits to having been intimately acquainted? Ralph Wardlaw, Greville Ewing. How many people have heard of Ralph Wardlaw? Scott Harp, who else? Well, interesting. Ralph Wardlaw was an amazing scholar. He entered the University of Glasgow. That's where Thomas Campbell went and studied, Alexander's father. That's where Alexander Campbell went in the year of 1808, 1809. But he entered the University of Glasgow at the age of 11 in 1791. And by this time, at the age of 11, now if you're interested, I'll show you where my paper is. It's in the Restoration Quarterly. You can find all of the citations. I have diaries of James and Alexander Haldane, Ralph Wardlaw, his memoirs. Several people cited original sources that go back to that time, if you're interested where this comes from. I cite some of them, but I don't cite all of them. And there's the bust of Wardlaw over his grave in the Glasgow necropolis. But he was a master of Greek and Latin. Later, he studied under George Lawson in the Burger Seminary at Selkirk, Scotland. Now, Lawson was a scholar of both Hebrew and Greek texts of the Bible. And according to William Alexander in the memoirs of the life and writings of Ralph Wardlaw, published in 1856, Lawson had memorized, he could repeat the entire Bible in Greek and Hebrew. I mean, he was a very knowledgeable man. There were several people who had memorized the scriptures in the original languages. Now, in his memoirs of Elder Thomas Campbell, Alexander writes, "I formed a very agreeable, indeed a very happy acquaintance with Dr. Greville Ewing and Dr. Wardlaw, very prominent actors among the Scotch independents." And so these men, Alexander Campbell got to know very intimately, and he was the best of friends with them. He later, of course, disagrees with them on one of their major points of contention. It's probably just about the only point of contention. That is baptism by immersion and for believers. Other than that, I think they pretty much saw eye to eye on everything. Now, if somebody knows different, I don't claim to be a church historian like people here really in this audience. So if any point that I'm mistaken, please correct me. I don't want to be in error or lead people in error. Ewing and Wardlaw had become the best of friends since the latter had left the Burger Succeeder Presbyterians to join Ewing as a Congregationalist in 1800. And then in 1811, the two of them opened their own seminary for training ministers in Glasgow, Scotland. Now, this was under the Haldanes. The Haldanes funded it. But you had Ewing and Wardlaw working together in training ministers. And now that was in 1811. Actually, by this time, they separated. 1811, there was a separation that occurred between the Haldanes that we're going to talk about. That's the major point of my paper, is it happened in 1809. But in 1811, they're working together in the training of ministers there in Glasgow, Scotland. Now, in the autumn of 1708, as probably most people who studied the life of Alexander Campbell know, Alexander, his mother, all of his brothers and sisters embarked on the ship Hibernia from Ireland, went by the coast of Scotland. They're on their way to America to join the father, Thomas Campbell. On October the 7th of 1708, the vessel in which they were traveling was shipwrecked. And that night, Alexander Campbell didn't know if he was going to live or not. But if he lived, that he vowed, if his life were spared, that he would devote himself to the ministry of the gospel. And my former teacher, the late Earl West, said in his Search for the Ancient Order, that Alexander Campbell's coming to the University of Glasgow on account of a shipwreck in 1808 was an act of divine providence. I remember hearing a story about one of the speakers. I can't remember who he was now. Paul Torrance, he's not in the audience, but he would know, but maybe some of the other guys. Years ago, they had someone here who taught. And he said, "You can just call it a coincidence." But he spoke in chapel one time, and a lot of people who were there heard that. They always remember that chapel talk. He said, "You can call it a coincidence, but I call it the providence of God." And I think there are some things, maybe we can't tell for sure, but looking back, I can see definitely, I believe even my coming here to Faulkner was God's providence. I had a lot of people praying for me, a lot of people trying to help me, all of them, I believe, we're part of the providence of God. And I believe God does work in our lives. I believe He does providentially help us if we're willing to be putty in His hands, if we're willing to be the clay soft enough that He can mold. I do believe in providence. And I think there's a lot of things that happen. I don't believe a lot of things are just by coincidence, maybe. And certainly this event, this terrible event, where the ship wrecks and they all thought they might lose their lives, and Alexander Campbell at a very tender age decided, "I am going to devote my life to the ministry." And he just happened to be in the right place where things came together where he could really prepare even further than he had been prepared by his father. Although he had thought about entering the ministry earlier, this decisive event, the shipwreck, brought Alexander to an unwavering commitment to the ministry, for in his deliverance he recognized, as Robert Matthews wrote in the Christian Standard, I liked how he phrased it, he recognized the interposing hand of God who preserved him for a work that could be done by none other than himself. So having decided upon this course, Alexander Campbell decided to attend the University of Glasgow. After all, he was right there in Scotland. His father had gone to the University of Scotland some 20 years before, 25 years. And Alexander, only 20 years old at this time, the same age as his father when he entered the university, he went and got a letter of introduction from George Fulton, whom he had met after the shipwreck. And then he and his family went to Glasgow, where they met Greville Ewing. And I don't think this was just a coincidence. Ewing befriended the family, helped them find lodging, probably helped them financially. Dr. Richardson talks about how often Alexander Campbell, and I've got the passages cited in my paper, how often Alexander was in the home of Greville Ewing. And just the conversations that they had together and sharing and him listening and learning at this young age of 20. You remember his father that he learned from is over in America. So Ewing was almost like a father to a young Alexander. And he helped Alexander to enter the university. Now, some people have complained. I think Brother McMillan said that when he went over there and looked in the university records, they did not have Alexander Campbell listed for the fall of 1808. Well, the shipwreck occurred after school started. So I don't think he was matriculated officially. I think Greville Ewing went and introduced him to Young and Jardine and all these other professors that he himself knew and got Alexander just to attend the classes. And he wasn't actually matriculated. And if there was any exchange of money, I wouldn't be surprised if Ewing himself did not provide it, because Ewing had a school that he had for ministers that he was training with Robert and James Alexander Haldane. We'll talk about in just a minute. And so I'm sure that there was some association with all these professors, with them learning Greek and studying theology at the University of Glasgow, and also the training that they received in Ewing and Wardlaw's seminary there under the Haldanes. But I also stumbled across this when I went to Memphis, and I was a student when I first did this paper. The two families, the Ewings and the Campbells, and by the way, in Campbell's family, I think his daughter married a Ewing. It's interesting, the names Ewing and Campbell. And in the earliest days, I found this in one of the books of the Ewings. They were writing on their genealogy. The Ewings would ally. This goes all the way back to, I think, the days of William the Conqueror. But the Ewings would ally with the Campbells against the Gordons many a time on the battlefield in conflict with the Gordons. The Ewings could be heard to shout, "The Campbells are coming, oh ho, oh ho. The Campbells are coming, oh ho, oh ho. The Campbells are coming to Bonnie Loch Leven. The Campbells are coming, oh ho, oh ho." And there's where I got it from, the Ewing genealogy with cognate branches. And I just wondered, this name, Ewing, and then Campbell, and I just wondered, you know, poor Alexander being a Campbell, if Ewing did not have already some inclination to befriend him. He's a Campbell, and I'm a Ewing. And they have a special bond. These families have a special bond. But I think a special bond happened between Alexander and Greville Ewing. And because of that, also with Ralph Wardlaw. So that later, when their reputation is impugned in the Millennial Harbinger, as if they're not scholarly enough, like Carson, that Alexander Campbell sticks up for them. No, he's not going to agree with them on their view on baptism. But that's just about the only thing that he doesn't agree with them on. And I wonder how much influence, I don't know if we really have the full influence. You can look at some of the writings. And I've got these in my presentation that I did that was published between the Restoration Quarterly. But all the influence of John Glass, Robert Sandeman, they pale in significance, really, to the influence that Greville Ewing had on young Alexander. In his seminary, Ewing taught these specific restoration ideas: independency of each congregation, the rejection of all clerical privileges and dignities. They did not use reverend, and Alexander Campbell did not like that term. The right and duty of laymen to edify and rule the church. The concept of faith as belief of testimony, which any man can do by just applying his natural intelligence to the evidence of Scripture. I've already mentioned the weekly observance of the Lord's Supper. And above all, Ewing stressed the Bible as the sole authority in religion and life. Now, Ewing taught under these two men and their help, James Alexander Haldane and his brother Robert. And I'm just going to stop here, I'm going to look at my paper here a little bit if I can, because I couldn't finish all the PowerPoint. There's so much. And I'm really just be reading the paper. But it just so happens that there's something that transpired, and you can call it coincidence. I think it was perhaps the divine providence of God. But in 1808, the very year that Alexander came to the University of Glasgow, James Alexander Haldane had been struggling for a whole year with doubts about baptism. And early in 1808, one of the members of his own church asked him to administer baptism via sprinkling to her infant, and Haldane refused out of conscience. Now, they had large support, large churches in their movement, the Haldane movement that they supported. And word got out, rumors about his repudiation of infant baptism, they spread like a wildfire through all the Haldanian churches. Finally, in March of 1808, now where was Alexander Campbell? He was in Glasgow. I wonder, though, if he was in the audience, if he heard about this. Maybe he was at the University of Glasgow in school. I don't know any way of answering this. But in March of 1808, several members asked Haldane at church about his views on baptism, and he promised to make a statement the next Sunday. And now I'm taking this directly from the memoirs of the lives of Robert and James Alexander Haldane. It comes directly from their memoirs. 1853 edition. The next Sunday, 4,000 people crowded there in Edinburgh, Scotland, in the church where they met. When Haldane seemed to balk, Ewing was there. Greville Ewing got up, challenged Haldane to prove that immersion was the only valid baptism. Dismayed by Haldane's unwillingness to approve of infant baptism and sprinkling, his churches, all the Haldanian churches, which Greville Ewing is training ministers for, and Ralph Wardlaw was training ministers for, they divided. Many of his followers left. Ewing himself left the Haldanian church there in Glasgow, and he joined his friend Ralph Wardlaw over at the Albion Street Chapel. The theological controversy between Ewing and James Alexander Haldane over infant baptism and sprinkling was further exacerbated by a personal controversy between Ewing and the other brother, Robert. And this involved money. There was his question of financial support of a congregation and a seminary that was under Ewing's care in Glasgow. Now, Ewing became very bitter in 1808 over this toward the Haldanes. And he talked about it. And Robert Richardson, in his memoirs of Alexander Campbell, mentions this. He alludes to this. That Alexander Campbell's sojourn in Glasgow came just at this controversy between Ewing and the Haldanes was reaching a white heat. Now, he doesn't mention really all the details. You have to put this together with the lives of Haldanes and also with Wardlaw and then the other items that I cite. When Alexander first heard the details of the controversy, now this comes directly from Richardson's memoirs, Volume 1, page 175. When Alexander first heard about this controversy with Ewing financially, with Robert Haldane, the financial issue. He became very decided in his conviction, and I quote now from Robert Richardson. He became very decided in his conviction that Mr. Ewing was in the wrong. Now, I'm sure that was a hard decision for Alexander Campbell to make, but because he was befriended by Greville Ewing. Greville Ewing had helped him and his family, his mother, when they were destitute. They lost everything they had, pretty much, in this shipwreck. Didn't have any money, but I can just see Alexander Campbell sitting in the house of Greville Ewing, and he's stewing over this. In fact, Greville Ewing even published an essay on this, on this whole matter of the disagreement with Robert Haldane. It was published in 1809, the very next year. So Alexander Campbell was there during this uproar between the Haldanes. With James Alexander, it involved infant baptism and sprinkling. And with Robert, it also involved that, plus it involved this issue about the money. So for 20 years after this controversy in 1808, you can see in the writings of Wardlaw and Ewing, them continuing to defend infant baptism. Now the question is, how did this impact Alexander Campbell? Did this have any impact on him at all? He knew about the debate over infant baptism and adult baptism, believers' baptism. He knew all the issues in this debate that had been brewing while he was there studying at 20 years old in Glasgow. And there's a statement also in that Campbell makes where he says that he would recall that Greville Ewing was much prejudiced against the Haldanes in his belief that only immersion was a valid form of baptism, owing, he said, to my connection with those engaged in the controversy. Alexander Campbell says that he was much prejudiced. This is a statement that Campbell makes. Again, I cited in my paper. So Alexander Campbell admits that he himself is struggling with this issue of infant baptism, owing to my connection with those engaged in a controversy with his brother Robert and against the system in general. And so I think Alexander Campbell is alluding to this very incident that occurred when he was there in Glasgow when Greville Ewing met with the Haldanes up in Edinburgh and had this dispute over baptism. Now, when Campbell left Glasgow, left Scotland, finally came to the United States, I think his prejudice turned to doubt. And there was a hesitation, really, I think, in Alexander Campbell. People have mentioned this. It really wasn't until the birth of his first child. Campbell was exposed to all this debate about baptism. But why did it take the birth of his first child, whether he's going to sprinkle his child or not, before him really to come to terms, to grips with this issue? I really think it goes back to this episode with Greville Ewing and Wardlaw and the Alexander, James Alexander and Robert Haldane. I really think it goes back to this terrible incident, and I really think Alexander was just so sick of all the debates and all the attitudes and everything. I think it really took the birth of his first child before he really had to come to terms with it. I'm sure he knew about the issues, but to really have to face and make a decision, it was really with the birth of his first child in March of 1812. So that we're talking about, he left there 1808, 1809, he's here in the United States, and it wasn't until 1812 that he really, after he's married and has his first child, that he comes to grips with this term. And it's then, on June the 2nd, 1812, that he's immersed. Alexander is, along with his wife, his sister Bryant, his mother, and his father, Thomas Campbell. They're all baptized at the same time. But I think they were struggling with this issue already. They knew about all the scriptures. They knew about all the reasoning. But I think it really was this incident in 1809 that really caused Alexander Campbell to hesitate over this issue. But it was a great time, I think, for Alexander Campbell to be there. He heard great men at the University of Glasgow. Even instrumental music was introduced at this time in Glasgow. There's a lot of issues that Alexander Campbell faced, and the debating that went on, I think that had an impact on him and helped him in his own debates later on as he faced these issues. So this influence between Greville Ewing and Alexander Campbell and then the Haldanes, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think the Lord works in our lives. He worked in Alexander Campbell's lives. He brought Alexander Campbell to Glasgow right at the time when he needed. He did not have the education where he paid fully and went 4 years. He had to cram his education in, really, besides what his father had prepared him to. But he had some of the best teachers there at the University of Glasgow. And he had the influence of Greville Ewing, and I think he was forced to face these issues that later he had to deal with when he really helped establish the Restoration Movement here on the United States. So I don't know if you've got any comments or questions. I got about five after. But how many people have heard of James Alexander Haldane, Robert Haldane, Scott Hart, maybe a few historians? I think Robert Sandeman, John Glass, all of those made their impact on Alexander Campbell really through Greville Ewing. It was really through his teaching. They were all influenced, and it was really Greville Ewing that was the influence on Alexander Campbell. So this association between the Campbells and the Ewings, I hope now you have some idea about who Alexander Campbell had as an influence. And I think this incident with the shipwreck not only decided firmly in his mind what his course of life was, but it enabled him to be put in contact, I think, with people that would help shape his life. He got to go to the university because of Greville Ewing. And I don't think he ever forgot that debt. That's why when later this person is impugning Greville Ewing's scholarship, Ralph Wardlaw's scholarship, then he has to speak up and defend him. No, he's not going to agree with him on baptism, but he respects them very highly and he feels very indebted to them and always did. It's interesting that there's an episode later, I don't know if I can find it in this paper, but Alexander Campbell goes back to Europe, and he goes back to Scotland, and he's trying to visit different places, and he's scheduled to speak some different places, and he makes a point. There's just a little blurb, I think, that's in Robert Richardson's memoirs, where he goes and tries to find Wardlaw after all these years. He doesn't have a cell phone. He forgot to send a letter or anything like that. It was just something he decided he wanted to do, and he rode several days to get there, and he found out that Ralph Wardlaw was not there. But he always had these men held in high honor. Huh?
That was James Haldane.
Was it Haldane? I was thinking it was... Excuse me?
Wardlaw died.
Wardlaw had already died. Okay, maybe it was Haldane then.
Haldane had... and visited Ireland where Campbell was and would speak on Sunday night at several churches that Campbell would attend. In fact, his father would also attend.
Well, I didn't check this out. Now, if you can, go to Richardson's Memoirs, Volume 2, page 565. Now, this is what I wrote. Again, I'm not claiming to be... I'm looking here at Carl Cheatham and Ansel Jenkins and Scott Harp. There's a lot of people here who know a lot more about church history than I do. But this is what I wrote. Alexander's love and respect for these two men, Greville Ewing and Ralph Wardlaw, were not diminished by this ugly controversy that erupted in 1808 or by the passing of time. Campbell continued to cherish their friendship for the rest of his life and was deeply saddened when tragedy struck their lives. During his visit to Scotland in 1847, Alexander rode several miles to see his old friend Wardlaw, who was not home at the time. So I put it as Wardlaw. Now, it might have been Haldane, too.
It was, I believe.
Yeah. But I have the memoirs, Richardson's Memoirs of Alexander Campbell, Volume 2, page 565. I'll go back and look at it. I don't know, maybe that's mistaken, but
David, you may be familiar with this. In the Christian Baptist, one of the earlier volumes, I believe, that Campbell was accused of being a Haldanian. I don't know whether you're familiar with that.
Yeah, I have cited that, I think.
Okay.
Well, go ahead, finish it.
He denied that, you know, that he was a follower of Haldane, but he said that he was like John Newton, that, you know, when he saw a particular truth in a man, that he would take that like a hen and pluck a feather and put it in her plumage. And he said this is what he did with, of course, they would be like Haldane and others. And he said he wound up to be a very, very multicolored bird.
Well, you know, men have influences in our lives, and women. God has brought many people in my life, and I think Alexander Campbell always cherished them. I don't know. It would be interesting to know if he ever tried to persuade them later. I don't know. I know I had a professor once at Harvard. In fact, he died. His birthday will be this 13th. And he died back in October of last year. And I remember going to the Society of Biblical Literature. And he was the one that I really have to credit with getting me through Harvard. Remember, I told you I was a lot older. I went in 1990. I didn't get out until 2001. And it was really Dr. Francois Bavon that got me through Harvard. And I had a professor that he was good friends with that was holding me up. And I remember trying to talk with him. I figured it would be our last meal. And I was trying to talk with him about his soul and about what the Bible says. Here he's a doctor in theology. He's my teacher. And I just really felt it hard. But I was trying to talk with him. And I just wondered if Alexander Campbell ever had those conversations. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you've had those conversations with a teacher where you believe that they're fundamentally wrong on a point, but you respect them very highly, but you're trying to, you know, have a clear conscience, as Paul would say, I'm innocent of the blood of all men. And, you know, you care about these people, and so you want to talk with them, you want to share the gospel with them. I don't think Alexander Campbell made any excuses for Ralph Wardlaw or Greville Ewing, but I just wonder, you know, if he ever really had that kind of conversation with them. I don't know. But anyway, they were certainly influences in his life. And there's Wardlaw. So, I don't know when we end. Is it 15 after?
No. Quickly, go get through. Thank you, David.
Oh, by the way, let me mention this. I'll make a plug for Scott Harp. I noticed on his website, therestorationmovement.com, that he has a whole section on Greville Ewing.
Yes.
And it's taken from the memoirs that his daughter, Matheson, had written. I mean, it's excellent, a chronology of the life of Greville Ewing. So if you want to know more than I shared, really, that is the place to go. 31 pages is what I printed out. He's got some excellent pictures of his graves there in his wife's grave in a mausoleum. And so I don't know if you want to say anything more about...
I know it would have been a normal thing for Ewing to have known the Campbells. Part of family history over there is to recognize names, you know, especially in Scotland. They, you know, if it was a family where you know, maybe some of your ancestry fought with in the past, you know, there was just a natural affection for connection with people. One of the stories that was told about when the shipwreck took place in the Isle of Islay, that Ali House there at the top of the area was owned by Campbell.
Oh, really?
And when the list of the passengers was made their way up to the to Ali House, he looked down the register and saw the Campbell name, and he said, tell that family they're staying in our house.
I think I do remember reading that.
And they were brought up to the big house to stay. Incidentally, that house is for sale.
Oh, really?
125,000 pounds.
So you went and found, did you have any trouble trying to find Greville Ewing's grave? Or?
His grave is, well, he has actually two graves. He had a grave that he bought in Edinburgh where his father and mother and his first two wives are buried. And they're at actually the foot of Edinburgh Castle, the hill down there. At the
he's married three times. Now, he's married. Yeah. He's buried with Barbara, right? His third wife?
Barbara was of very wealthy descent, big landowners south of Glasgow. And so he, when she died, she asked if he would be buried with her, and he said that he would. So he's buried in the family plot there. It's you know where the family plot is, just doesn't identify the graves.
Oh, really? It doesn't?
So he doesn't have...
Well, I couldn't tell that from the pictures.
Just does not have his name on a grave anywhere.
Huh. So, but they know he's there.
It is in that enclosure, yeah. Because I've got the she talks about it in the paper about, or the book that she wrote, about where he was buried and that he was buried in the enclosure. Now there's no roof on the enclosure now, and there's only one kind of one name on the inside of the enclosure. But it's very much a place. I mean, it's just not really kept in the old churchyard.
Does it have Barbara Maxwell's name on it, Ewing?
No.
No? So nobody's individual names there.
It has some of their ancestors' names.
Well, you can go to his website if you're interested and check that out about Greville Ewing. I'm done.
Thank you, David. That's very good.